This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Open for business on BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, good morning and welcome to Open for Business, the show that dives into the journeys and ventures of entrepreneurs and business leaders. I'm Roshan Gunnison, and this morning on the show, I'm speaking with Ooi Boon Cheng. He's the founder and CEO of WebBytes, a regional retail tech provider. Founded at the end of 2007, WebBytes is a software development company that specializes in software solutions for the retail and F&B industries. It's 38% owned by GD Express Carrier, or more commonly known as GDEX. The company began as a small project attempting to reinvent retail software, and today its customers include the likes of F&B brands such as Zeus and GG Coffee, as well as Tea Life, as well as retailers such as The Body Shop. Their core product, the Zilnex POS solution, is also used in the international airports in Malaysia. With over 5,000 retail merchants across Southeast Asia and billions of dollars worth of retail transactions per year, today we dive into how WebBytes has evolved over the last 17 years, the value they bring to the retail and F&B space, how they're positioning themselves to leverage AI and machine learning in the retail tech space, and much more. Boon Cheng, welcome to the show. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me here.
So you've been on a 17-year journey here. And just for context, you founded the company in December 2007. This was before BFM, but also just before the global financial crisis, just when Facebook was getting up and running, a few years after Google. So it's been a long journey here. When you started, Boon Cheng, you know, in the world before the cloud, what was the original problem that you wanted to address with this company?
What we really actually started is to actually digitalize retail stores. So I started the business by walking every single stores and talk to merchants and tell them what can we do for them. That is where we start building solutions. That is my pre-uni days.
You were doing this before you went to university?
That's correct.
You were talking to merchants about what they needed, and you were already developing software for them then?
Yes. And of course, to put it into perspective, you know, once we finish our secondary schools, all the Asian parents will make you work. So I was like telling my parents that, okay, I probably don't want to be standing as a promoter. I want to try running my own business. So I start talking to merchants to see what I can do for them. Hence, I bump into the industry.
Very interesting. So talk to us a little bit about the timeline here, right? Because you were already doing some of this development in your pre-uni days. I understand that you worked for around 9 months in an MNC after uni before you really went full-time to this business. So talk to us about that timeline, right? What were you doing before uni? How did that lead to the company? Tell us a little bit about your story.
So before my uni days, I actually write on-prem solutions. And then, of course, obviously, I got my uni in software engineering. That's where I get my formal education in software engineering. Of course, during that part, I do face with a big challenge because I can't service the 2-3 customers that I have because everything is on-prem. And obviously, I don't own my own transportation at the time. Virtually, that gave me a sign that if I were to build a solution, if I were to rebuild a solution, I have to make it something that is online that I can actually do it way far beyond the customers. So that is how the ideas comes in. And then, of course, after my uni days, I worked for MNC because, obviously, again, I didn't have the cash. So I worked for 9 months and I applied for the MDEC pre-seed grant, which I got the initial $150,000 grant that started WebBytes officially.
So this was based on the work you were doing from before uni, the same digitalization you were doing for retailers and stores?
It's the same market, but it's a totally new solutions that we try to rebuild. But this time, we wanted to make it online.
You've used the word on-prem a few times, and you know, on-prem solutions. Basically, you build software in-house that was used on premises. Basically, today, obviously, we have a lot more cloud infrastructure. Yeah. Talk to us about what on-prem entailed when you were starting, you know, when you needed to build a solution or write a solution for these F&B places or these stores, what did it entail? Because you had a little bit of that it couldn't scale, right? Or you couldn't service them without it going online.
Yeah, so that is where I would think that once the moment we started WebBytes, we know very clearly that we wanted to make the solution online. But at that point of time, there is no cloud.
Mm.
The word cloud is not even popularized yet.
Yeah, so it really meant Awan, you know.
Correct. It's still that Awan, yeah. So we call ourselves software as a service. We tell people that, you know, we can store your data safely. You can actually put it into our data center. At that point, it's a very localized data center that we have. It took us many, many years to actually start telling people, creating stories, telling people why you should keep data with us and not with yourself. So that is definitely the biggest challenge that we have.
Yeah, I mean, we take this for granted today, right?
Yes.
Everyone has some kind of cloud service.
Correct.
Today. We're basically outsourcing our needs for hard drives and servers. Yeah. But, you know, when you started, like you said, new concept, you know, this is almost pre-iCloud, if I believe. I think iCloud only came in 2010, 2011.
Correct.
How difficult was it to get sales, to sell people on this idea of, give me your data to store?
It's super difficult, all right? I still can remember that I go into meetings, the moment they say that we doesn't have an on-prem model, we are out. Because they cannot understand the concept. But again, it comes with a benefit. Because when we go in, we tell customers that you don't have to pay us upfront. You stop buying software. You stop paying tens of thousands at that point of time. But just pay us a merely 100 ringgit, you know. Which a lot of retailers, due to the economical of scale, will think that, okay, it's still cheap, right? I can try, you know. So why not I try? So that actually changed the mindset. And I have to attribute the iCloud, right, that's being introduced around 2010 that actually changed a lot of mindset. When people start taking photos and the photos are being automatically stored on iCloud, and it makes a lot of this conversation a lot easier, you know. Mm. When we talk to business owner, I tell them what phone you are using, and then they say that you're running an iPhone. And I said, I just can tell them it's exactly the same concept. Yeah, so that is the whole conversations.
Do you remember your first sale?
Of course. So, of course, obviously, a lot of our first sales are not being driven monetary, right? Because, I mean, there's no way to
get
charge
the customer
customers.
First, yes. We'll deal with the money later.
Correct. So, a lot of our first sales customers are being done that. I mean, at this point of time, we still embed that internally with our new product.
Mm.
A lot of our customers using our new products are still not being charged. You know, we really get a lot of inputs from them. So, yes, the first sales is bittersweet, I would say.
And we talked a little bit about the product there, but before we dive into that, like you said, you know, you were already doing some development work pre-university. You tried your hand at working at an MNC for 9 months. Didn't pan out, wasn't your style. You went back to your software roots, essentially, and you built a business. But you had very little experience, right? In the sense that you were fresh out of uni, you did some business, you had some experience pre-university dealing with clients in terms of building product for them. What did the early days of building this business look like? And did you have to bring other people to kind of help you do this?
Yeah, of course. Once I started WebBytes, of course, the first batch of, I will always tell them, the crazy bunch is our other co-founders that actually joined me from the journey until today. You know, so these are the people that that believe in the vision, and I tell them that, hey, we can actually do this. We have the capability. And of course, at that point of time, I've gotten the grant from MDEC, and that gives them a sense of like, we can survive for the next 1 year. I mean, of course, the story doesn't, it's not honeymoon.
Of course.
We spend all the money in the first 1 year without having a sales.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's another story about how that panned off. But yeah, so the initial guys, my partners today, they are still with us. They're still with the business. They are holding all the important roles. Yeah.
And these were your classmates?
Yes, they are all my uni classmates.
All IT people?
Yes, all software.
All fighting
engineers
for the CTO position, I presume.
yes. But of course, then we found out after some years, we know what we are good at.
Mm.
Each of us are now handling different things.
Did you have to bring in other non-IT people in the founding team, or did you guys learn how to do business?
We are forced to learn. I learned myself. I signed up courses to read P&L and balance sheet. Yeah. So yeah, that come at the later part where, you know, we learn. And of course, I got my wife, who is actually not in finance background, that did our finance just to save accountancy fee, building the whole account, running on Excel.
Running a lean team there.
Yes, super lean team.
Boon-Cheng, we got much more to get into, but sure. First a few messages. Folks, I've been speaking with Uy Boon-Cheng. He's the CEO of WebBytes, a software development company that specializes in software solutions for retail and F&B industries. But before we go into a few messages, if you're ready to elevate your brand and influence the next generation of marketing leaders, you want to immerse yourself in a transformative brand building experience by joining us and 25 other industry experts at the 19th BFM Brand Fest, taking place on the 3rd and 4th of July in Bangsa South City. Secure your early bird tickets by the 26th of April before prices go up. So you want to do that today. And to ensure that you don't miss this opportunity, visit bfm.my/brandfest for more details. Folks, I'm Roshan Kennison. This is Open for Business. We'll be back in just a bit, so keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Kennison, and this morning I'm speaking with Uy Boon-Cheng, CEO of and founder of WebBytes, a software development company that specializes in software solutions for the retail and F&B industries. Boon-Cheng, you gave us a nice picture of how this business started in 2007 and the journey you've been on, especially given that you started in a pre-cloud era, right?
Yep.
It's today hard to imagine people being skeptical of going to the cloud. But back then, it was a big deal and a big challenge for you to kind of sell people the idea of, let me, you know, store your data for you on my servers, on my, what do we call it today?
Infrastructures.
In my infrastructure.
Yeah.
Data farm. No, I'm forgetting the word now.
Data centers.
Thank you. Now, today you've got a range of products and services. I think Zillanex is your core product. And
yes.
I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. So it's got a POS system. You've also got things like automated food pickup smart racks. So A lot has come about. It's not just a POS system. You've got a lot of, you've built a little bit of an ecosystem as well, a little of accessories, ancillary services. Briefly take us through some of the key areas of WebBytes' current product mix today, the key areas.
Sure. I think how we actually build is that, of course, obviously we started with point of sales as our core business. But natural progression, we always grow together with our customers. And I always tell customers that in the retail and F&B business, it used to be the main important things used to be location, you know, it's always about best location, but this has changed, you know, that how people buy things. So it's obviously on our side, customer, our merchant requires more support from omni-channel sales, from automation, from in-store optimizations, from reportings, from the whole supply chain, from franchisee management solutions. So because of that, we start building a lot of these accessories alongside our POS. So that is how the whole journey, and then it makes us really, really focus on how we actually make our merchant growth as our key directions.
And as F&B has changed as well, there's a lot of, you know, there are self-ordering kiosks, people have queue management systems as well. I think these are things that you do as well. What does it look like, right? So you're obviously with yourself, you're targeting bigger businesses now, enterprises, and no longer the single store like when you're in your pre-uni days.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the target market and how your services support them, right? So like, give us like real world examples of what your POS systems and these other services do.
Of course, obviously, we still do the 1-2 stores if they are looking for growth, you know, because a lot of our solutions are being designed to help retailers to be easier for them to manage the store remotely. Multi-tiering permission policies, a lot of this very enterprise level control with the objectives of helping them to ease the growth. All right. So that is the key point. So yes, you're right. Most of our customers are being segmented as chain stores.
Yeah.
So they have a very different set of problems as compared to a 1-2 store mom pop shop kind of things. Because firstly, obviously the owner will not be in the store.
Yeah.
All right. They can't monitor. And I always tell them one key thing, all right? It's easy to train 5 trustworthy branch manager, but it's impossible to train hundreds and hundreds of them when you have that much of outlets. Mm-hmm. Hence, systems, digitalizations, how you control the SOPs, how you calculate the stocks, all these controls then comes in very importantly to assist the business grow. Hence our tagline, simplifying growth.
So for example, right, Brian Liu can't be at all the Tea Life stores in the country or in the other countries for that matter. Yes. So you've got your POS system as the center OS, I presume, that controls a lot of the other things. So at least it's the center dashboard.
Correct. That's correct.
And then you've got, you know, like when you, I'm sure all of us have had experience of either we order online and we go to a Zoo, sorry, GG or a Tea Life and there's a display that's showing our queue number. Yep. So these are all the things that are powered by you?
That's correct. That's correct. And it solves different set of problems, you know. And of course, obviously, we no longer just serve walk-in customers, but we also serve customers that actually order online. So all these queue management systems used to be not important, but now become a crucial part of the whole business to manage customer expectation.
So for example, if I buy something from Zeus on Grab, this would then hit your POS system and then get processed.
Yes, that's correct.
So that's on the F&B side, but you also support retailers, right? So we got like The Body Shop, for example, Alpro Pharmacy, a lot of the shops at the international airports as well. How does your offering for the retailers like this differ from the F&B side?
In terms of retailers, it's slightly different. We do a lot more nowadays, especially on the intelligent part of it. So we incorporate a lot of intelligence. We do product affinities. We do what people buy this and also buy that. Unlike F&B, where you have a limited SKU. Mm-hmm. But in retail, when the SKUs are in thousands and thousands, and a lot of times, it's very difficult to know if your outlet is doing any upselling, for example.
Right.
So you need reports, you need intelligence, you need some anomaly checker, you know, that actually helps to actually detect fraud, detect people that's not doing their work. So there's a lot of enterprise functionality that are being embedded into the solution to drive growth.
And I'm presuming AI and machine learning will be a key part of that as well, processing all that information. We'll dive into that a little later, Bucheng.
Sure.
So just for example here, I've got multiple stores, either in multiple SKUs or retail, or even in when I'm doing like a Zeus coffee, I've got all these different supplies I need. And there's an amount of milk, coffee beans, all these different things. And I want systems to kind of make sure that we are optimized, that we're not buying too much, but we're not buying too little as well. This is what you're trying to address.
Correct. And of course, these have to come in a live manner nowadays, right? So there's no longer I can do my stock take next day. You know, I need to be able to track the number of fried chicken I have at the back of the store pretty much immediately, right? Because we call it just-in-time replenishments. All these data need to be on the cloud process, not just in terms of quantity. We also take care of the cost as well. Because the cost of the product, if certain raw material has price increases, how does that impact certain menu in the say will also be very highly impacted the business.
So this is where your value add, your intelligence comes in. You can suggest raises in prices depending on...
Usually, we actually uses our AI to suggest in terms of suggested ordering quantity. Mm-hmm. But in terms of pricing, we do have something called dynamic pricing that you actually do a dynamic pricing in online sales.
Right. And this is, for example, hotels, booking sites, airlines do this, right? The more times you go back to it and you haven't made a purchase, you tend to see the price go up to kind of give you this buy now before it becomes more expensive.
Correct.
All you got to do is clean your cash and then you can kind of go back to...
Yes. And we are building the whole full suites of solution as we speak now, as we do see that the intelligent part, a lot of our merchant now really understand, you know, that they need to incorporate more AI-based functionality into the business.
So there's a lot in terms of the value add, inventory management, supply chain management, keeping track of your employees as well, and wastage, I presume, is a big part of that.
That's correct.
I understand that your revenue generation model is a software as a service model, it's a SaaS model. Where are you in terms of revenue generation today, 17 years into the business?
Of course, we are. I mean, this year, we definitely will hit more than 30 million and about of it is actually from our, we call it ARR, annual recursive revenue.
Is most of your business ARR?
Yes. I would say almost 85, 90% of them are ARR.
It's a very loyal customer base right there.
Of course, because we serve enterprise, we continue to deliver values. We do have very, very good customers that work with us to help them to grow. I mean, that's a part of our DNA. Mm.
Yeah. 30 million as of last year, annual sales?
That is this year. Last year, we did about 26.
Last year, about 26. So you're expecting 30 million this year?
Yeah.
Right. So still about a 10% growth rate. What has been the growth rate and what do you expect?
It's actually definitely higher, about 15-20% as usual. But of course, still early of the year.
Yes, still very much, still quite early.
So we still have to look at how the market goes.
And between the, you know, you've got F&B clients, you've got retail clients. Is the business roughly split or is one heavier than the other?
It's still roughly split. But if you allow me to wade in, I would think that the F&B will continue to grow much faster pace compared to the retail stores.
Did F&B come down during the pandemic? Actually, I presume that would have impacted everybody quite evenly.
Yeah, it depends. Those brands, there's a lot of brands that we are powering that actually take a lot of proactive actions. We call them really proactive businesses that took, instead of being hit, they took advantage of the situation.
Interesting.
And how they actually make use of omni-channel solutions that actually not really impacted, but in fact, they grow during pandemic.
So clocked in 26 million in revenue last year, expecting 30 million this year. Wenqing, I want to ask you also about your expansion, which happened around 8-9 years ago, started going into foreign markets. But we'll dive into that in a little bit, as well as your why you brought GDEX into the equation as a big substantial shareholder and whether an IPO is on the cards. Folks, I've been speaking with Uyibun Sheng. He's the CEO and founder of WebBytes, a software development company that specializes in software solutions for the retail and F&B industry. I'm Roshan Kanesan. You're listening to Open for Business. We'll be back after the news bulletin, so keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Brand-friendly marketeers, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Kanesan, and this morning I'm speaking with Uyibun Sheng, CEO of and founder of WebBytes, a software development company that specializes in software solutions for the retail and F&B industries. The company was founded back in 2007, 9 months after a 9-month stint at an MNC. Uyibun Sheng decided the 9-to-5 was not for him and decided to dive into the software world, developing on-prem solutions for F&B players as well as retail. Today, the business is expected to make 30 million ringgit in revenue this year, made 26 million last year, and it's not only tapping into cloud computing but also artificial intelligence and ML to support both the retail and F&B industries. Bunsheng, you've come a long way in 17 years. You and your classmates from back your uni days, over 5,000 customers today. You've got resellers and partners overseas that are supporting you as well with your core solution, Zilnex. Over 30,000 installations in the region, if I have that correct. Yeah. But your expansion overseas only started, you know, about midway your journey, right? So about 8 years ago in 2015. Why was 2015, 2016 that the time to start expanding overseas?
I think it attributed to two things. Initially, we just thought of like having reseller to actually just resell our solutions overseas. And of course, GDEX came in around that time.
2016,
us,
right?
Yes, inspired us to go regional, which is a part of GDEX plan to be a regional company. So at that point of time, we thought that, okay, let's do it. But of course, we picked Cambodia as our first way of going regional.
Directly or through a reseller?
Originally through a reseller, but now it's a direct 100% owned. It's important that I told the team that we need to learn how to operate in different countries, right?
Cambodia is a very interesting first stop. Why was that the case?
Okay, it's nice because cost there is reasonable. The market size is small enough for us to make errors, all right? So we doesn't want to go
it's
into
like your beta test.
Yes, yes. We don't want to be like going to the big country, you burn a lot of money, hard to sustain, then we have to close down. So we wanted something that is something that we can reach.
Truly a software developer.
Two hours
in the way you build your business as well.
2 hours from Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah.
No any issue, we can just fly in. So we started that from ground zero. And it's profitable now. And once we are more stabilized, we understand how to control the finance, how to actually do all the banking stuff. Then these couple of years, we really start looking into the other rest of Southeast Asia country.
You're also in Singapore, Indonesia, Vietnam, Canada also as well, and Australia, is that right?
Yes, of course, some of the very far countries like Australia and Canada are because of we have customers there. We have certain chain stores that are founded there that found us through some connections. That's how we got
so kind of
there.
Some kind of relationship with the owner or the franchisor or something like that. So relatively small, I presume?
Relatively small, but due to the currency, it's still sizable.
So material less.
Yes, but of course, the main focus that we want to have physical presence is still at the Southeast Asia market at this point.
Okay. So you sell directly, but you also sell to resellers.
Correct.
How big is the reselling partnership business?
It's not huge. Okay. It's probably like, I think less than 10%. And a lot of our resellers are pretty much value add. So they actually do a lot more than just software. It could be maintenance services, managed services that actually give added values. And we work very closely with them so that then they can actually add value to the whole business.
Right. So the after-sales service, all these kind of things that can be provided locally. What are the key markets for you in terms of revenue? I presume, I hope, Malaysia is a key market for you.
Malaysia is definitely a key market until now. As we have compared to regionally, which we are growing, we hope to... I mean, it's about 5% regionally at this point. Well, we do see that it will grow pretty faster compared to Malaysia.
So 95% of revenue is Malaysian?
Last year.
5% is foreign markets?
Yes, foreign markets.
Including your Canada, your Australia, all of that.
Correct.
So that is still a growth area for you.
Yes.
I just saw, I know T-Life is one of your clients, and just on LinkedIn yesterday, I saw that they, Brian Liu was in Philippines, opened their 50th store. Are you servicing them there as well?
We started to, because we just got our approval to run our POS, which I mean, you need to have an approval to run POS in Philippines, the only country that we need that.
So now that you have that approval, that's a big step for you in terms of growth.
Correct. Hence, we put in, I mean, we weighed in quite a bit of resources to make sure that we serve the market well.
Now, you started in a pre-cloud era. Today, you've got AI and ML coming into the picture. Talk to us first about what cloud computing did for your business, and then we'll talk a little bit about what you expect AI and machine learning to do going forward.
Sure. Of course, the first thing about cloud computing is that it's scalability. Mm-hmm. As most of our customers are actually looking into having a lot of different promotions. Again, like I mentioned, it's no longer just a physical store. Because if it's a physical store, you can control the crowd, right? How many people comes in, people see there's a long queue, I will not come over to order, right? But when we are being digitalized, there's a lot of things that we need to scale. You know, you can do gold rush promotions, for example, and I'll give out 10,000 vouchers in one shot. And that actually generates a lot of tractions in terms of your app, your loyalty, your online, and all this stress will go to the back end. Right. So hence the cloud computing, the scalability of it become the core and how we can actually scale that depending on our merchant promotions, our merchant demand, our merchant growth beyond Malaysia. So that is the pinnacle reason why and how the cloud computing has been helping us as well as our merchant.
And now the next phase of the big gold rush right now is how everyone can tap into AI and ML or some kind of LLM in the background. How are you going to be leveraging AI, machine learning in the solutions that you have to support your customer base?
I think the interesting part again...
You look very excited. I can see it already. You're seeing up straight already.
Because we have been seeing this trend, like how we see the cloud trend 10 over years ago, right? That people now believe in AI due to the Gen AI technology.
You can see it, right?
Yes, you can see, you can touch, and every layman basically can start using it, and then there's all of a sudden everyone believe that AI is the future. All right. But to be honest, it has been there a while. You know, it has been using for forecasting, it has been using for vision, identification, anomaly, predictions. It has been used in business all this while, just that a lot of business owners are not sure or probably not having much confidence to actually leverage on it. So it actually comes into this particular time that all the business owners now realize that, okay, I need to be AI or ML enabled.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives us a very strong motivation to invest in our engineering resources to continue building product along that line. Mm-hmm. You know? We talk about doing product affinity analysis. We talk about doing operating hours optimizations. We talk about how to forecast your sales usage. We talk about how to actually know the promotion efficiency. There's so many things that the AI and ML can be applicable and make substantial result for the merchant.
Right. And so at the end of the day, in order for the machine to learn and then utilize AI to kind of leverage all that, you need data. And you have a lot of that data on your systems.
Yes.
And it's very specialized data in terms of those businesses themselves.
That's correct.
How could you visualize for us the value that that AI and ML is going to bring once you have your products in play to your clients? Like, how will this make business better for them?
I think the most important examples that I always share is during the COVID time, where a lot of our customers start calling me and ask, how can I reach my customer when I can't operate my physical stores? And that actually makes us realize, you know, that data now has become very important.
Mm-hmm.
And all these years, certain businesses didn't collect any data. And some that have collected all these years, they're not sure what to do. Now they suddenly think that, okay, I know what to do. You know, a simple example would be doing targeted promotions.
Yeah.
You know, so if you carry a lot of SKU, you don't want to waste airtime giving things that is not relevant to you. You know, you only have 3 seconds, 5 seconds of messages time, emails or ads, you know, on Facebook, and you want to target the correct person, the correct product at the correct time. And with the data that already sitting there, running on the AI and ML that we have, we'll be able to give a very strong suggestive promotions, a very targeted marketing product that's being tailored for that particular customer. That helps a lot.
I presume this will also help lower the cost of customer acquisition, right? Online especially.
Yes.
Now, how material do you expect your AI and ML tools to be to your top line in terms of growth in revenue?
It's not substantial yet at this point. Of course, there's a lot of traction and a lot of interest. we are doing a lot of POC with our customers. We are doing estimation. But at this point of time, we are still doing the cost calculation, working with hyperscalers, running on different AI engine to actually test out the whole model. Of course, again, our passion is to help our merchant grow. We really want to make sure that the product actually makes sense to merchants.
Munsung, we got more to get into. After this, I want to talk to you a little bit about whether you've given fintech a thought, given how much data you process, what JDEX brings to the table as a partner, and as whether an IPO is on your mind. Folks, I've been speaking with Wee Boon Cheng. He's the CEO and founder of WebBytes, a software development company that specializes in software solutions for retail and F&B industries. I'm Roshan Gunnison. You're listening to Open for Business. We'll be back in just a bit, so keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Gunnison, and this morning I'm speaking with Wee Boon Cheng, CEO of and founder of WebBytes, a software development company that specializes in software solutions for the retail and F&B industry. Boon Cheng, again, as I mentioned earlier, 17-year journey started. The inception, the idea kind of started in pre-university, but you gave university a shot. You gave the working world a shot. 9 months in, said, nope, this is not for me. Took some classmates of y'all and started building this business, trying to revolutionize retail tech. This was in a pre-cloud era. Cloud computing has changed the game. You expect AI and ML to do the same as well in terms of the value add it brings to your clients. Now, you've got a lot of data here, and yes, you can use LLMs and ML to kind of empower your customers. But what I've seen with a lot of other players who have some kind of POS system or some kind of other system that's plugged into F&B and retail is that they're also looking into fintech solutions, especially given how much data they process. Working capital can be such a big pain point for F&B players. Are fintech solutions something that you have in your mind as a growth area?
It is definitely something that we do see a growth, but it's not something that we want to put our own effort into it.
Understood.
Hence, a lot of these fintech directions are being done via partners. So we work very closely with banks.
Plenty of people have great solutions, yeah.
Yes, we work with banks, we work with buy now, pay later players, we work with all these. I mean, they are very good in that industry. We let them play. And of course, on our side, it's always a solution play.
Right. So you let people who already have the products, let's not build it from scratch.
Yes.
Are you partnering with any P2P finance, any alternative financing players? Because you have bank partners, but alternative financing players?
We do integrations. Mm. So there is, you know, when we allow our merchants to offer buy now, pay later options. And a lot of time they actually go through the payment credit card terminal players. So we are like one layer after that. So we do not, sometimes you do not have to deal with them as well. But it's a part of its ecosystem.
Ah, right. But yeah. In terms of the businesses getting, let's say, short-term lending or working capital lending, it's still through the banks mostly?
Yes, it's still through the bank. As most of our customers are chain stores.
So they're much larger as
well. Yeah, much larger.
They have bank facilities.
Yes.
In terms of other things that you're watching into power growth, what are some of these things? Because we've talked about partnerships. We've talked about, are you maybe looking to use some money to acquire some players out there, other markets? What are you looking that will power growth going forward?
It's interesting to say that the business has been profitable for quite a bit of years. Mm-hmm. We have sufficient operating capital to grow the market. The strategy has changed a lot. That doesn't require a lot of capital to grow regionally as well. It's very lightweight. So we don't see that we'll be actually having to fundraise. Mm-hmm. At this point of time, we have very good partners on board, GDEX, that actually help in terms of the e-commerce part of it, helping to do connections with different business people around the ground. So at this point of time, in terms of growth, are mainly still in product, building new product, coming into new segment, and as well as the regional growth as the key growth.
Is e-commerce an area you're looking to expand into?
Not like directly, but to empower, which means that we become the key connectors of all those e-commerce platform.
Now, GDEX is a... So you're profitable, I presume, after 17 years in business.
Yes.
I hope that you're profitable.
Yes.
Can you give us a sense of the level of profitability the business is at?
The profitability is there, okay? I mean, all this while is I mean, we doesn't have a single year that is in red, all right? Of course, it's cash flow positive. But we don't see high profitability for a couple of years because we increase... I mean, we invest a lot for our customers. We invest a lot in our headcounts. Mm. So to date, we have 170 people and a lot of them are software engineers. So we reinvest in building technologies. But the good thing is that at least we're not losing money. Mm-hmm. Hence, we don't raise fund.
Yeah. So no, you got initial grants in the early days, I think MDEC as well as Cradle. Obviously, in 2016, GDEX and Teak Ventures came into play. Yeah. GDEX took 38% stake aside, and I presume that came with some capital infusion as well.
Yes.
Was there any other funding raised in over the last 17 years?
No, but chronologically, Teak came in first as the initial VC. Of course, then they sold that share to GDEX. So
so they've exited already. Like.
Yes, so Teak Capital exited. So we have GDEX now. They came in and of course, they put in capital as well to grow it to what we have today.
Did GDEX expand on Teak's stake? So
they did.
I would presume that you wouldn't have sold such a big stake to a VC in such an earlier stage, right?
We still did 30 at that time.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So it's still substantial. Bigger. Yeah, it's still substantial.
All right. So Teak's value add, I presume, was capital, VC coming into play, help you grow the business.
Governance.
Yes. Maturing the business.
Yes.
GDEX, much different player in that
network sense.
Right. So, yeah, talk to us about that relationship because they own 38% of the company. Yeah. I presume this is a key relationship.
Of course, the key things here is that we learn a lot. Of course, Mr. Tiong personally is a very visionary leaders in the industry. So what we learn is that, you know, of course, being GDEX, being a public listed company, we have to strengthen our internal process as well, governance, security, cybersecurity directions, how we make sure that our customer data are correct. Of course, market expansion. GDEX also do a lot of regional expansion nowadays that we actually follow suites, you know, like, okay, they are there. We can leverage on networks. You know, we fly over together. We meet the same people in the same meeting. You know, so there is a lot of leveraging coming from this direction of the business.
Strategically for you, so obviously the initial stake was sold to Teak. GDEX brings with itself, with its expansion, its size, its ambition.
Yep.
So there's a lot of non-monetary value there.
Yep.
with expansion as well. How's that relationship been like? How active do you work with GDEX? You know, is it just reserved to quarterly meetings, or is it a more active relationship?
It's actually, I would say, very active. Mm. I mean, comparing to a VC, as you only deal with 1-2%. So the relationship with GDEX is that, I mean, definitely they are a much larger corporate. They mm-hmm. have different people dealing with different people from operation, business. They have the cybersecurity segment. They have the e-commerce segment. So mm-hmm. We have different people that actually mm-hmm. deal with them separately as well. Understood. So it's not really just at the entrepreneur levels, but also across the corporate levels.
So what would you say is, if you had to boil it down to like one key thing, what is the value that GDEX is going to bring to you as you continue to grow forward?
GDEX gives us like the lighthouse, you know.
Okay.
It's like something that we aspire to be, mm-hmm. you know. So they have done that, they have did that. Mm-hmm. Or in other words, they know what can be done, what shouldn't be done. So there's a lot of learnings along the way. Yeah. And it's always good to have a leader in front mm-hmm. that actually shows us the way.
Yeah. Obviously, this relationship is now about 7-8 years yep. in. And they've provided, I'm sure, a lot of guidance to you. What is the synergy from your perspective? What is the synergy that in terms, because you know, GDEX is logistics, right? And you are a POS system, so some people might wonder, like, where's the synergy here? What would you say to that?
I think it's misconception, because we are being seen like an IT company and then they are a logistic.
Yeah.
But to be fair, we are all serving the same group of customers, the SMEs, mm-hmm. the chains, the e-commerce clients per se. So we are actually quite complementary. In fact, there is a lot of shared customers, all right? Mm-hmm. And we share a lot of insights as well. You know? Mm-hmm. So this particular customer looking at this, and that particular customer is actually doing what is the expansion plan. Like, though there's a lot of sharing that we can actually do mm-hmm. internally. There's definitely not being seen by public.
Right. And I'm sure the software development capacity that you have is very yes. beneficial to GDEX as well, right?
That's correct.
So that may be part of their own calculation as well. Now, looking ahead, as we come to the close in the conversation, obviously GDEX has a big stake here, but you've been doing this for 17 years, you know. Have you ever given any thought to taking the company public or, you know, fully exiting to GDEX? What is the exit kind of conversation like?
I would says that personally, I run the business with passion. Mm. All right. So exit, I don't foresee myself will exit the business. Mm-hmm. So I believe that people like us and my other partners, we actually hold a lot of satisfaction when we see specific brand growth and the solution helps them to solve certain matters. Mm-hmm. So if I would say more likely, if you look at it, again, we are not fundraising at this point. IPO maybe, but again, it's not something in a very short roadmap. Again, like we mentioned, we are not in urge to raise fund. We have sufficient growth for our regional expansion. At this point, it's still pretty much trying to run, and I'm definitely not retiring early. And of course, I'm a very tech and product person. I spend time talking to customers, understand their pain point, and work very closely with them. So, I mean, that fills my days, you know. And I can't imagine a day without doing that, you know. Yeah.
Bunjang, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Folks, I've been speaking with Ui Bunjang. He's the founder and CEO of WebBytes, a software development company that specializes in software solutions for the retail and F&B industry. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can catch the podcast on the BFM app or wherever you find your podcasts. Just look for Open for Business. We're also on the BFM website at bfm.my. I'm Roshan Gunnison. You're listening to Open for Business. You've been listening to Open for Business. Keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
You've been listening to Open for Business on BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.